Hello, you're listening to Laser Graves, a podcast where we dig up movies, music, books, and events from the 80s and discuss how rad they were. Okay, we're going. So, hello. Welcome to Laser Graves.
Thanks for having me on my podcast.
You're welcome. And your name is?
My name is Mariah Rose Wimmer. What's your name?
My name is E.K. Wimmer, and we are your co-hosts for this journey that we're about to take you on.
Oh, it's a journey now.
It's going to be a journey.
Okay.
So don't stop believing.
Oh, original singer, or what's the other guy's name?
I don't know.
Guido.
It's not Guido.
Jordan
Knight.
No.
Okay. Oh,
well, that ties into our theme.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. Okay. Well, we're here. We're going to be talking to you about 80s goodness and...
Or badness sometimes.
A lot of badness, but badness in a good way.
But no mediocreness.
No, not at all.
Okay.
For this premiere episode that you're... listening to, we'll give a little background. We're married and we are big podcast listeners, and we kind of were like, you know what, we should do that someday, and we just have never gotten around to it. And then we finally decided to, and everything says podcast about what you love, and it was a no-brainer for us because we fell in love over 80s music, 80s movies, 80s everything. And so why would we not dedicate a weekly podcast to everything 80s?
Yeah, that's fair enough. Although I would say that we didn't necessarily bond initially over 80s stuff, but we're getting there. Like, we spent most of our relationship bonding over 80s stuff. But what was our first movie together?
It would have been...
What is it?
My Giant.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
Because you and your mother and a friend were going to watch it, and I really thought you were cool and wanted to hang out with you.
How could you not think I was
cool?
Well,
I was like, dude, if this chick's watching My Giant.
Hastings, Friday night,
oh, yeah,
My Giant.
It's a party. And so I sat there awkwardly with your mother and you and friend and watched a movie called My Giant that I didn't know anything about, and I was under the impression that it had Andre the Giant, and it did not have Andre the Giant.
I think we all might have thought that. My mom was excited about Billy Crystal, but I think I was just sold on Giant.
Yeah.
It's my kin, so I wanted to see a movie about my
true,
kin
you
folk.
Are a giant.
Yes.
But that might have been our first, like, movie, but we then went on a pretty hardcore journey in your high school bedroom of watching 80s movies that everything we could get our hands on. And then by the time we left for college, it was no looking back. It was every possible horror movie, especially 80s movie we could get our hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And we just burned through them. And so we bonded over Depeche Mode, The Cure. So this podcast is kind of a celebration of that, but we'll put it... A couple things I'd like to mention up front is we are not specialists on any of this, so don't get uptight if I...
Oh, no, we're 100% certified specialists.
And then also, there'll be some popular subjects from time to time, but for the most part, it's going to be more obscure stuff that we're into. So you may or may not have heard it. I would hope that if you haven't, that you'll look into it and enjoy it like we have over the years. Some of the stuff will be new to us, but most of the stuff I think we're going to try and approach from some background of it. Like, we maybe watched it once or read the book once or something.
Or we wanted to.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
now we have
an excuse. Learn more about.
So it'll cover movies, music, books, events, just kind of things that are 80s. And we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go from there. But this first episode, why not come out strong? It's... this was a lot of fun. I had a blast watching this.
Oh, yes.
And I'm looking forward to talking about it with you.
Yes, and I only fell asleep really at the very end.
True. It was probably one of the better movies you've gotten through as mm-hmm. far as not falling asleep multiple times, but just really
just like
once.
At the end, yeah.
Yeah, so good job.
Thanks. I'm
really proud of you.
Thanks. That's adulthood for you.
It is. that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen this movie before, though.
Yeah, for sure. We saw it, I don't know, I've probably seen it 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I was trying to think of that, too. I definitely have seen it a couple times. I just don't know how many.
Yeah, it's just been, I mean, we've had plenty of time to watch it.
I'd always get it confused with Night of the Creeps because it has a similar name, Night of the Comet. But that's what we're going to be discussing. We'll definitely get to Night of the Creeps at some point because we got to talk mm-hmm. about the Bradster. But
Oh,
yeah. But...
But not tonight. No Brad's
no,
tonight.
No, not at all. This episode is Night of the Comet, not Night of the Creeps. Night of the Comet, 1984.
How old were you?
I was 4. How old were you?
40. No, I was 3.
You were a very mature 3.
My mother said that she felt like she was raising a tiny adult, so.
I dance myself right out the womb.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
So, 1984, Night of the Comet. Did you happen to come across what the original title for this film was?
No. Do you want me to guess?
I do, because you won't get it.
Calcium dust.
Oh, no, it was actually brick dust that they used.
Really?
Yep.
Oh my gosh, I got one of the 2 words right.
Right, but that was not the original working title. You're going to love it. Are you ready?
Wait. What? I thought you just said brick dust was the title.
No, that's what they used for the dust. Not.
Oh, okay.
Okay, anyway.
Got it.
We'll get there. The original title was Teenage Mutant Horror Comet Zombies.
Why would they change that? Well, I guess there are no teenage zombies.
Well... Yeah, I guess, really, there's
so
not.
So it wouldn't have made
like
any sense.
An old one and a young one.
That would have been a garbage title.
Yeah.
Just garbage.
I think she does mention this title, though, in the... We'll get there, but...
Okay, so Teenage Mutant...
We'll bring it up.
Comet Zombies?
No, Teenage Mutant Horror Comet Zombies.
Oh, it really does not roll off the tongue.
It does not roll off the tongue like Night of the Comet.
Nope, that's... Probably a good call. Somebody was like had a meeting. There were glasses and paper shuffled, and they're like, "This doesn't make sense."
That's right. The designer for the poster was like, "This nothing's working right now. Too many words.
500
words.
He's
probably French."
The French would love it. They'd be like,
"Too many words.
More words."
Okay, 1984, written and directed by Tom Eberhardt. Here's a pet peeve of mine.
Eber?
Maybe Eber. I'm more concerned about his first name. This is going to be something.
Is it a TH?
It's Tom.
Tom.
Yeah.
Thomas.
It's like Thomas. Yeah. I don't get it. Anyway, Tom with a TH.
But it's more accurate, though, if you're shortening Thomas to
Thomas.
Thom.
Okay. So, Tom Thom.
Where else do we combine a TH into a T sound? I'm sure there are examples. I'm putting you on the spot.
Thumb.
No, because you don't say Tom.
I guess I'm confused. I feel like this is going to go on for a long time.
No. We're going to hash this out right now. What other examples of TH as a T sound can you think of?
I don't know. Probably a foreign language.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So maybe he's really cultured.
Okay. Whatever.
Anyway,
we have
this gem.
We need some Thomases to call us and tell us about it.
Thom had a big idea. He wrote this down. Here's a little fun fact for you. Brace yourself.
Mm.
You want to know what else he directed?
Uh-huh. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
No.
He just had to get a teenage something.
Captain Ron.
What?
Yeah.
Weird.
How cool is that? Is Captain Ron in early 90s or late 80s?
90s, for sure.
Dang it.
Please.
We'll have to... We toyed around with this idea of jumping in a time capsule to go forward. So
I really, really love Captain Ron.
Yeah,
so let's go there.
Okay.
Not
anyway,
today, though.
Director of Captain Ron, but before that, Night of the Comet, 1984.
Mm-hmm.
You ready to jump into this? Because we blabbed on, I think, for a good chunk of time. I had a blast watching this again.
Yeah.
It's so much fun to watch.
It's
every
good.
Single time I enjoy it.
Let me pull up my notes. So the opening sequence.
Wait.
I took notes.
You're calling them notes.
Yeah.
Technically.
Look, I'm going to scroll through. It's on my phone.
Oh, you kind of did take notes.
Thank you. It's several hundred words.
Okay, I'm going to do what we probably shouldn't do, but I'm going to come clean.
Mm-hmm.
This is our first episode.
What?
But it is definitely not our first episode.
It's our very first. We've never done this before.
And I'll just say your notes have gotten progressively better.
Okay, so, well, that doesn't say a lot because I don't actually remember the opening sequence. I just wrote Night of the Comet. Opening sequence is my nightmare.
It starts with a voiceover.
Okay.
And there's one of the quotes is, the visitor was returning.
It was the comet coming back.
Yeah. So circling there's a voiceover. Round. Really cool 80s jam.
Last time since the dinosaurs.
Yep. And then the film starts up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're introduced to our leading lady, Regina.
Oh.
Regina?
Yeah. No.
Regina.
She's not a Canadian city.
Not a Canadian. Regina. So she's like this total 80s babe. She's in an Usher's outfit. Which, you know what I thought right when I saw her?
Mm-hmm.
Like in Williamsburg right now or something, I don't think anybody would even turn their head. She looks pretty cool in the Usher's outfit.
Well, when you're
feathered hair.
When you look kind of like a model, it doesn't matter. You can wear actual garbage and people are like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, but I guess the opening scene in this is like her work outfit, but I was like, man, people could really just pull that off now. That's mm-hmm. kind of in vogue.
Yeah, I'd wear it for sure.
So whatever, an Usher's outfit could be cool if worn by the right person. But she starts off, she's kind of cool. She's playing an arcade game. And right away,
let's go over what she's wearing. So she's got on socks with high heels.
Yeah.
She's got on tuxedo pants, which I guess is like her uniform, maybe. She's got on a vest. She's playing a video game. And she's basically like a nerd boy's babe.
Oh, yeah.
Which is insulting, but whatever.
It's not.
It's 1984. We can't hold them to our standards. Anyway, so we learn her name is Regina.
Regina.
And she's got all the top scores because she's the best.
Oh, yeah. She's hanging out. She's playing. And it kind of right away to me made me wonder, did it remind you of anything?
Mm-mm.
Reminded me of Hackers. Do you remember that scene?
Oh, yeah.
And Angelina Jolie's characters, like, got all the top scores.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
And she's really pissed because somebody else got a top score. Mm-hmm.
What isn't Dade?
Oh.
Shush.
I like how you pretended you didn't know.
I have it memorized.
Anyway it kind of mm-hmm. gave me that feel right away, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if you got that. I definitely got that.
Sure. Nothing else reminds me of Hackers, but I could say sure.
Sure.
So this is the point at which the, in my notes, we call him Big Britches Projectionist.
Oh, really?
Enters. Yeah. Like she's told to go clear the aisles and her projectionist boyfriend.
Well, that comes up later. At this point, I'm like, oh, this is just some like nerdy film guy. You know, like everybody who works in film now.
He's too big for his britches. He thinks he's hot stuff.
Yeah, I would say working at a theater in high school is to like film crew,
mm-hmm.
as is like waitressing is to actresses. Like everybody who's in mm-hmm. film now that's like an, you know, any kind
doing
of
their time.
Director, editor, screenwriter, they probably worked at a theater when they were a teenager. And
sure.
That's this guy, right?
Yeah.
He just strikes me as like this nerdy AV guy.
Yeah. But he also thinks he's real special because he has Regina. Like he's got the ultimate nerd babe. So he's scored. He feels good about himself. Is he dealing drugs?
Okay. First off, I didn't even realize they were together until later. I think that you're getting ahead.
Am I?
Yeah, because we have to meet Samantha, her sister.
Oh, I thought that came. No, she first meets, like we see the Big Britches projectionist because she goes up to his studio. We just don't know what happens.
Yeah,
yet.
That's why I'm saying we're not even together yet.
Then it cuts to Samantha.
Samantha is her little sister.
Let's paint a picture of Samantha.
Oh, yeah. Let's do.
So she's a teenager, although I looked up the ages of both actresses because I was like, I did not look like that as a teenage girl. And they were 24 and 25 when they filmed this.
Really?
That makes them 100 now.
It's true. This film came out a long time ago. It holds up well, though.
Yeah, so Samantha is wearing spandex. She's on a couch, and she's eating potato chips obnoxiously.
Yes.
Basically, everything that goes into this girl's mouth is annoying to
me. It's very Valley Girl.
She chews with her mouth open.
Yeah.
She's got gum all the time, probably even when she's eating potato chips.
And then we'll cut from there to the mom. Right, it's just, is it with 80s movies and arguing, the teenage drama?
Yeah, Samantha, to be clear, is the stepsister, correct? It was a little,
maybe
a half a line, because I think she is Regina's stepsister, so we have a sister dynamic going on.
Yeah.
And then Samantha's mom comes in, her name is Doris.
Yeah, and they are going to throw a comet party because there is a comet coming.
Yes.
It's kind of the Hale-Bopp thing, everybody knows it's coming, or the Y2K, everybody knows it's coming, so they're going
to
throw a comet, comet party.
Mm-hmm.
And Regina right away has got the sass, right? Like, it's typical, teenage
80s. No, Samantha.
No, Regina, I thought, is the one that says...
Oh, she's on the phone.
Yeah.
And there's a three-way fight happening.
Yeah, I have a quote.
Oh, I hope Regina. It's the same quote. Go ahead.
Oh, we'll compare quotes.
Okay.
Mine is, actually, no, because if it's you, you can do it in the voice.
No, I can't. Don't make me act. I'm the worst.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You're being modest. So she says, look, I'm 18, okay? And I can watch the comet wherever I want to watch the comet.
Oh, that's
and then do you
messy.
Remember what the mother's response is?
No.
She punches her in the face.
She punches Samantha in the face, not Regina, because Regina's on the phone at the movie theater. Yeah, dude. She's at the movie theater. She doesn't leave.
Really?
Yeah. She calls and is like, tell Doris I'm not coming home, because she's going to be with the projectionist guy.
I'm off to such a bad start.
Okay. It's okay, because I have a handle to this point. You can cover us when we...
When you fall asleep. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so Regina calls in to tell Samantha and Doris she's going to be working, even though she's really not working. She's doing some other stuff with the projectionist. And Samantha is sassy, and she's telling Doris, and Doris is like, tell her she's got to be back here or else. And there's some sort of comment that is made about the neighbor, Chuck, who apparently is sleeping with their mom, but he's nobody's dad. So it's like just a weird neighbor affair.
Oh, he's got a good thing going then.
One of the girls, I don't know which one, says, you were born with an asshole, Doris. You don't need Chuck. Uh-huh. And then we hit the point of the movie where there's slapping and punching. And I think that this is so over-dramatized because they don't want you to feel bad about the mother relationship. Because she's not going to survive.
I just was kind of shocked.
It was really
escalated pretty fast. It went from a couple slaps in the face to just a full-on punch to the teeth. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, mom.
Okay. Yep.
That was pretty extreme.
Yeah. And then so Samantha goes and crashes in the shed, decides my mom's slapping me. I guess I won't go to this comet party. She goes there. And then Regina, she goes up to the projectionist booth.
Right, that's where we cut to this mismatch, right, where they're apparently an item.
Well, hold on. So between here and there, the sky turns to red TV static. And then we get to the projectionist booth where you realize that Regina and the Big Britches projectionist guy have been doing some unseemly things in the projectionist booth.
I just didn't buy that.
Who cares?
No. Yeah. I mean, it's just whatever.
She didn't even seem to buy it because she's laying there eating popcorn and some sleeping bags on the floor. And she's like, later, dude, as he leaves.
The comet whole special effects scene.
Yeah.
Where,
so all this is happening. And that's when the comet hits.
It is so cool. It's like a Lisa Frank binder. Is it not?
Yeah.
It's the colors, the patterning. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
They were running through whatever filters. I don't know what they called it in the 80s. They could apply to the sky, just over the top of a city. Like, here's some fuzzies. Here's pink.
I just feel like they were sitting there storyboarding or something, or they're in the editing room, and the director's like, man, what are we going to do for effects? What colors are we going to do? And there's somebody sitting there scribbling their notes, and he looks over, and they've got, like, the classic Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper with, like, a snow leopard.
Oh, and, if only.
And they see the maroon, and they're like, okay, this is what we're doing. And you know what? Speaking of which, we'll get to this later, but whoever was in charge of the overall lighting and stuff in the sets did a really good job, especially later on. The colors are awesome throughout this whole entire film.
Do you think that the one we watched had been remastered? Because it was
looked really clear. Yeah, I think it must have been, because it looked really crisp. Anyway, so yeah, everybody is dust now. That's what we later find out.
Yeah, so it's really like vague. All of a sudden, they're like
pretty vague too.
They're like partying, waiting. It's never even clear that there's really a comet party. There's just some like very general mentions, and then there's the Lisa Frank explosion, and it's not an actual explosion, just somebody had lots of fun with their effects. And then the next morning, there's piles of clothes and red dust.
Yeah. I do have one minor note, not to go back too far, but why is the projectionist film guy dressed like a lumberjack? Did you notice that?
Yep, it's very unclear. Is he selling drugs? I don't know. Why is he so rude? He should be kind of thankful because Regina's quite a catch.
Yeah.
So Regina wakes up the next morning. She's in the projectionist booth eating popcorn while the guy's like, I'm going to go sell drugs or something. And she's like, later, babe. I'm going to chill here and eat some popcorn.
And she goes out. And what's cool is there's this red dust poster on the door. Remember that? That was kind of cool. And then as she's going out further, I think does she play the arcade again?
Well,
yeah, she goes back and plays
the
arcade.
She does that. And then her boyfriend goes to leave and is faced with our first experience of a zombie.
Which I was really confused by.
Whole zombie element
What was the point of
confusing that? Because there's only like four.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought throughout the whole film. I was like, was that necessary?
Who
got to be a zombie?
Yeah, it's like, not explained.
How come he wasn't dust? Because either you're hiding or you're not. And if you're not hiding, you're dust. If you are hiding, you're totally normal.
Mm-hmm.
I was confused by that.
Well, they kind of go into it later, and we'll get to that. But not so much the zombie part, just some of the after effects, like exposure-wise.
Yeah.
But I don't know why there was a zombie. Anyway, he kills the boyfriend. And that's basically the last we hear or worry about him. There's like a moment where Regina will learn about it, maybe?
Easy come, easy go.
I guess.
She leaves. She decides to go out on the street. There's a Death Race 2000 poster on the door, too.
Oh,
did you catch that?
You pointed it out.
The lady, the scientist that we're going to meet pretty soon, she was in that movie.
What?
Yeah, pretty cool.
Easter egg.
All right. So she leaves. Actually, she's leaving from the El Rey Theater. I don't know if you caught that, too. That's a really historic theater in L.A.
No, I don't. Yeah. I'm not a
I noticed it. And I was like, oh, that's
expert.
Pretty weird. So she walks the street. Yeah, there's that zombie bum. That was pretty weird. She comes across a zombie bum. I love this scene's hilarious.
Is it the same zombie?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he tries to attack her. Like, he took down the boyfriend, but she's super calm and just like brutally beats him up.
Well, she like stumbles upon the guy's, her boyfriend's keys, and there's like a bloody wrench, and she's like, oh, I should go investigate the box pile over there. And that's where the zombie comes out of.
And she just beats him up. Like, no problem whatsoever.
She even warns him. She's like, I should warn you, I've been trained.
And she was serious.
Yeah, she didn't mess around.
And so she beats him up. Then she gets on a motorcycle. And here's what I'm thinking. Like, she had just got done playing, you know, Tempest or whatever she was playing on the arcade.
Mm.
She beats up a zombie, gets on a motorcycle. Like, dude, this is like a nerd's dream come true right now.
Yes. Also, zombies talk. This is where we learn. Yep. That zombie, like, talks to her.
Well, not anymore. He got beat up.
He got beat up, and she nerd dreamed off on a motorcycle.
She takes off. It's got this cool dreamlike feel. I really like the score. We finally start to hear a little bit of the score here, a lot more too. It's really good. I looked into the composer. His name's David Campbell. He didn't really do much of anything, but I do like the score quite a bit.
It actually made zero impression on me.
Well.
But that might be just because I was so focused on trying to figure out what was going on with the storyline and, like, make sense of it. But
well, and I compose music for films, so I'm going to, like, pick up on that a lot more than you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I try to listen just for you so I can feel...
engaged.
Educated.
So she goes home.
Yeah, she has to find Samantha.
Yeah, I have a note here that you were really taken aback by how wide the staircase was in their home.
It was weirdly wide.
And then I thought about it. I'm like, dang, you really could get a lot of, like, furniture sideways up there. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
You could move, like, a couch up those stairs.
It was pretty good. Kind of made me wonder if it was a home or if it was, like, a business that they were shooting inside of.
Like a law office?
Yeah, or, like, a furniture store.
Totally.
Anyway, so, yeah, she goes back. And then, so Samantha, by the way, is now in a cheerleading costume.
Yes. Well,
she's got a boombox.
She wakes up the next morning. Both of them don't really realize what's happening. I think Regina is now aware that something's happened because she's found some red dust, and apparently she's put it all together. The logical assumption is everybody's turned to red dust. So she goes in kind of upset, but Samantha's, like, chewing her gum.
She's so 80s. She's
so obnoxiously. She's got her big hair.
Did you recognize her, by the way?
Yeah. What's she from?
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
You're going to be so happy. Chopping Mall.
Oh, yes.
How cool is that? I knew it right away. I was like, oh, it's a chick from Chopping Mall.
I recognized her, and I was like, I don't know what she's from. Yes, that makes perfect sense.
Oh, little side story.
Oh.
You know what I got last night?
What?
That Chopping Mall vinyl.
What?
That limited edition that was sold out. Mm-hmm. It was on eBay. Somebody finally put it on eBay, and it was a best offer, and I lowballed him, and he took it. So we got that one. That one that Waxwork... Remember, it has a really cool, like, it's like a pink vinyl of the score for Chopping Mall, okay. And I was bummed out because I, like, sat on it. I missed it. Missed my opportunity. And,
honestly,
well, guess what? Patience is a virtue, my friend.
Good for you. I totally blanked out that entire story, but I... do want to know, did you, in fact, also buy more Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark?
I don't buy them online. I only buy them in person when I find them at a thrift store. So, no, I did not.
Okay.
Yep.
How many are you at right now?
I don't know. Maybe 20 plus.
Okay. So, quick sidebar, side note. Like,
sure.
Step aside. A little aside here. Eric collects... all of the scary stories to tell in the dark that he comes across. And I don't know why. He seems to have a purpose. Do you?
Yeah. Okay, well...
I mean, you've kind of alluded to a greater picture, but I've never put it together.
We'll
something about mailing it to somebody somewhere sometime.
We'll talk about this later when we do an episode on it. But, you know, we grew up with those books. They were really important to us. And I did so there's a documentary coming out on the books, and I did the feature film score for it. And then I decided, like, oh, that would be a cool score to put out, I don't know, maybe on vinyl or something. And I thought maybe there's, like, a perk I could do. People might enjoy an original copy of the book that could be mailed with it. And so I got this grand idea long before I knew what I was going to do with the score. And just every time I came across a book, I would just go ahead and grab a book. And I've been doing it now for a little while, maybe 6 months or so. When I come across them, I collect them, and I kind of cutthroat about it. Like, when I see them, I claim them and I put them away. But I do have, because there's a loftier, you know,
oh,
intent.
Sure. Saint Eric of the...
the Scary Stories.
The
I'm
going
to go
stories.
Ahead and disperse them at some point to,
okay,
to
I'll,
people.
Okay, I'll believe it when I see it. So at some point in the near future, we're going to need an actual number so we can keep tabs on how many
do a
you
tally.
Have. We're going to end up, like, renting a warehouse just to have all of
they're
these.
They're pretty hard to come by. But
so, yeah, you, like, actually cut people off to get them. Like a woman, like an old lady, angrily pursuing her.
Yep,
her deals at a garage sale.
Ooh, look at there. They're scary stories. I'd like to have me a copy. And
yeah.
I just go ahead and I do the mom punch to the teeth and take it and run away.
Wrapping it back into our actual
purpose.
Yeah,
because that was really got off track. So
yeah, it's
we apologize.
Your fault, not mine.
Mariah will do that a lot.
Okay, so we're back to where Regina and Samantha reunite, and she has to like shake the sense into Samantha, who does not understand that it is in fact the end of the world.
Rude awakening for sure. And I think she's kind of concerned about boys. Like, she's like, And I read that the director interviewed teens to get a sense of what they would do in this situation. Because we should keep in mind, this is a post-apocalyptic film. It's a really great, just so we're clear, I love this film. I think it's fantastic.
I liked the scenes of, like, the empty city. I mean, it was, like, two different shots, but they really made the most of it.
Yeah, for sure. So we get to one of our main like sets, which is really cool. This radio station.
Yeah. So the sisters hear somebody's voice on the radio station.
Yeah, and
they're
decide
like,
to go check
it out. Gotta go there.
It is so cool when they walk in. This radio station, it's like you know, the synthwave, like thing that's happening right now, and all the covers are like a throwbacks to the laser grids and stuff. That's what this is. This is like the set of a music video for a synthwave album. It's so cool. The like purples and blues and everything. There's
lots
lasers.
Of fluorescent lights.
Yeah, really cool. And they go in, and that's where they arrive at the radio station, and they are kind of like, met with this thug, right? He's like got a gun.
Gun guy McGee is how I named him. Okay. Until I discovered his name is actually just Hector.
Yeah, he's got a name tag, but we don't know that yet. I do like, just like how Regina was with the bum, the zombie bum, when she beat him up, she was really calm. They're very surprisingly calm when this guy pulls a gun. And one of them, I don't know which one of them, says, "You get a lot of dates this way."
Oh, that had to be Samantha. She's so sassy.
She is sassy, Samantha.
She's a spitfire.
Yeah. And then, so yeah, we meet Hector. This guy looks like, I don't know, how could you not, if it's an 80s movie, be like Eric Estrada, right?
He does
kind of have that Chips look to
him.
Well,
it's because he's got the hair that's like kind of comes a little heavy behind the ears.
It strikes me that when he's like offset to go get a coffee, he's got pastel pants and like, you know, a sweater around his neck or something.
Yeah.
So it just was very, very much that way. Also, can we talk about Regina's shoulder pads in this scene? Do you remember? They're huge. I don't know if you noticed. I gave them a 10 of 10 when I looked at them. Yeah.
I didn't even make note. I just assumed everybody had shoulder pads at every moment of this.
Well, there's shoulder pads and then there's Regina's shoulder pads. So.
Okay.
That sounds like an indie band.
Regina's shoulder pads?
Yeah. What were we going to originally... What were you pitching to call this podcast when we were very
first? Hot snow?
No.
Oh, unicorn shoulder pads.
There it is. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so we're in the radio station.
And then, obviously, Sam has to start running radio station.
DJ Sam, for sure. Yeah. I think this is when she actually says the name of the original movie, the mutant zombie comet thing.
Okay.
But she also does say, my favorite scene is she goes into the mic and says, "The legal drinking age is 10.
Oh.
Which...
Can you even imagine?
Make a little mental note of that for our next episode, because I have a little question about that legal drinking age. Anyway, so yeah, she's DJing.
Obviously, she's very skilled.
Yeah. And I kind of also in this impression, like, Regina's punching people in the face and beating up bums and playing video games and riding motorcycles.
Zombie bums.
She's so cool. And then in this scene, she's just kind of lame. She's just not as fun to be around.
Well,
she starts to get a little lame.
It's like she's realized it's the end of the world.
Yeah, but that's
or
not
something.
Cool. She had like a thing to, like a well, she's maintaining an image, and she's really letting it down right now.
Yeah, actually, this is kind of a weak point in the film where I was like, all right.
Well, I think it's because the set was so cool. They just relied on that. They're like, it doesn't matter what's happening.
Yeah, because the next scene, it just transitions to some sort of government-y bunker.
Is it like a missile?
It's
or
like
a fallout shelter kind of idea.
Kind of implied bunker, implied government. They're all wearing, like, there's a bunch of scientists. They're all wearing, like, baby powder blue onesies
with the
white belts.
They were definitely
from the 70s. Like, yeah. Somebody said, pull those out of the closet. They look soups of fish.
Speaking of white, we meet the female scientist. Her name's White. It says so on her badge.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's the one from the movie that you mentioned.
Yeah, Death Race 2000. And so they're monitoring that these teens are alive. They're hearing them on the radio. And they're like, oh, there's survivors out there.
Yes.
And shocker, this woman does not want to invite two teenage girls to come live with them in the bunker.
No, I don't think that it's like a jealousy thing. I think it's she feels that something nefarious is happening and she doesn't want to bring them there. Also, this is where we are introduced to what the red dust piles are, and I have actually a great issue with that. They call the dust piles calcium dust. Now, in my research,
I'm sure it was really thorough.
Google the word calcium dust, image search.
And?
It's white because calcium, white, of course, bones.
Yeah, but all the dust was red. That's interesting.
So it should be iron dust because...
Oh, man, you're like...
I'm a scientist.
You should be in the bunker with the scientists.
No, I would have closed the vents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. We'll get to that later.
Okay.
Okay. So they're down there. And then we'll cut to another. The next scene is.
Back outside the radio station.
Amazing night scene. There's this like night driving scene.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. It's so cool. It is like, again, a synthwave dream.
I kind of zoned this out, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
I kind of went into like a synthy trance. Well, is that a thing?
It's appropriate because Sam's speeding and gets pulled over by cops. And I remember like thinking. Wait, what? You know when you watch a movie and then you haven't watched it for like 10 years, you forget some of those plot, especially with a movie like Night of the Comet?
Yep.
I just was like, why are there cops driving around when everybody's dust? And then the cop comes up and surprise.
He's a zombie.
It's a zombie cop, which I thought, well, there's a movie right there. Oh, zombie cops.
It's for sure a thing already.
And then, nope, psych, I hate this. By the way, this is another one of my pet peeves is it was a dream. It was a dream sequence. Like, just make it happen. It wouldn't have been hard to just have zombie cops in this scene.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a dream. And then we cut back to she's still in the radio station, and it is the most amazing bathroom I've ever seen in my life.
I forgot about that. I didn't make note of it.
I did. It's got purple and black tile. It's got lightning bolt tiles, and it's got these amazing lights. I just... Whoa. Here's, in my mind thought, if we had money, I mean, clearly we have a nice studio that we are recording in right now, but my ideal Laser Grave studio is this bathroom. Like, how cool would it be to recreate like scene for scene, tile for tile, lightning tile by lightning tile, this bathroom for the Laser Grave sound booth.
I like the idea. I feel like it would be echoey.
Well, they would look like tile, but they would actually be foam tile. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect plan.
So looking forward. Flawless. So listeners out there, I know we already have so many on this first episode, but be aware that we may do some fundraising in the near future to build a replica of the bathroom from Night of the Comet for our sound booth.
I don't want a foam floor in a bathroom.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's cut to Hector's getting emotional and wants to go visit his mom, right?
Yes.
Also, I didn't care about this at all.
Also, we had like the girls just start shooting up a car in an unexplained scene.
Yeah, well, that's right after the mom scene. But yeah, so he leaves for his mom. And then, yeah, we cut to Sam and Regina are with like... MAC-10s, Uzis, I don't know guns, but they're one of those kind of 80s guns. What is with, side note, sorry, but what's with 80s movies and people just pulling out Uzis randomly?
I don't
remember in House 2 when Charlie is about to walk into the jungle and he just goes, hold on, and he comes back and he's got an Uzi?
Yes.
What?
I don't know what an Uzi is.
I have no complaints.
But
I'm okay with this.
They do have weaponry. And then they start fighting about swiping. They use the word swipe, which is, I think it's kind of falling out of use, and I'm okay with it because it sounds so much like wipe. But they have a fight about swiping guys, and basically Samantha's like, you're swiping the last guy, and Regina's like, well, he's kind of cute. But this is in reference to Hector, because it's the end of the world. They're trying to like call dibs on the dude.
Hector's like, Eric Estrada. So, I mean,
but I mean, like, in all fairness, they both were talking about crushes they just had, and Big Britches projectionist just died by way of zombie.
Oh, come on, that was a favor.
That was yesterday.
That was definitely a favor for her. I also have, we're 44 minutes in, and this is when you called it a night.
No.
Yeah.
Because then Hector goes to his mom's house.
No. We called it a night right there. You said, I can't do this anymore.
Oh, yeah. And then we had to start up the next day.
So,
to be fair.
You know what? Congrats for at least calling it.
To be fair, we have sick children this week, and I've been up with them at 2 with puke. So I had to just go to sleep.
Which everybody wanted to know about.
Puking children. Let me tell you, it's gross.
Hey, fun fact.
Nope.
Did you know, here's a little fun fact, that Joss Whedon was super influenced by this, and this was the premise for getting Buffy started?
I can only say Joss Whedon as Joss Whedon.
Oh, good thing you have a pop filter.
Joss.
No, stop. Okay, anyway, Hector goes home. Nobody cares about the scene at all.
It's so funny. There are so many good things. Let me outline them for you. So he goes home. He's looking for his mom, but instead gives up, grabs a pillowcase, and puts his trophy in it.
Yep.
Maybe it's his trophy. I don't know. A trophy.
I have a question. The record stops and goes to, like, the Matrix and then backs up right when he walks in.
Uh-huh.
As if somebody was just jamming out, like, to a record?
No, it's been on repeat. It starts again.
It didn't start again.
Yeah, it sat down, and then it came back out and started
apparently
again.
Hector's mom was in money then.
She had a fancy record player.
No, it was not fancy.
So he okay. goes and loots his house for old trophies, apparently. And this is where we see the JFK... portrait.
Yeah,
on
there's
the wall?
A portrait. That's pretty cool. And then we meet our next zombie finally. There's a two
zombie
zombies.
Number two.
It's a little kid. Ugh.
Child like a neighbor
actors,
boy.
Dude. I can't even. Whatever. But no.
Child actors are the best.
Yeah. So zombie kid, I don't care about that at all.
He attacks him.
Yeah.
I mean,
cut back to the bunker.
Oh, we're just going to skip the rest
of
this?
It does kind of scoot like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he just goes back. Through. Okay.
I'm going to make a note that the bunker is like drama central. Have you noticed that? Every time it cuts to the drama, or to the bunker, they're having a lot of serious conversations.
They're very stressed out.
I'm like, I would rather take my chances on the street than deal with that nonsense because it is not fun down there. It's like
don't
a soap opera
fun.
Down there.
No, they seem real lame. And so like a helicopter arrives with a couple of kids in pajamas.
Oh, yeah. We get introduced to those kids, too.
Yeah.
Great.
They don't play an important role.
Well.
There's, like, a situation
kinda.
Later. But,
Anyway, then we cut back to the sisters. They're in a police car. I'm so confused at this
point.
So
is it the dream police car?
I don't know.
Was it not a dream?
I don't know. Did I miss something?
And they turned it into a dream sequence?
How did they get a police
Who
car?
Who knows? They have a police car.
At least you're as confused as I am.
Yep.
Then we go to the 80s mall shopping scene.
Hold on. Sam says, the thought of the end of the world makes me nervous. And then they immediately transition into talking about bad skin. And I get that they're trying to set it up, but like very casually, like the thought of the end of the world makes me nervous. Also, I'm breaking out.
Okay, but they end up going to the mall, right? This is where they need to go.
Yep.
And we are met with this montage that's kind of Day of the Dead-ish, or Dawn of the Dead-ish, sorry.
I was like, what?
And, you know, we're mall shopping, free-for-all. Mm-hmm. Girls just want to have fun is playing.
Basically all of your 1980s stereotypes.
Yeah, and it is not Cyndi Lauper's version.
No.
It is a version by somebody named Tammy Holbrook, who...
Tammy!
...does a really great job. And I later read that she was the voice of Tommy in Rugrats.
What would you say is the high of her career? Was it being a singer or being Tommy?
I think it was this song because this was the song that was used a year later in the film Girls Just Want to Have Fun with Sarah Jessica Parker, and it was a huge hit.
Question. Do you think they just made Tammy Tommy? Like they just dropped it?
No.
They just masculinized her name?
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay. Anyway, so now we're in the mall. They're shopping around, and then we get introduced to...
It's a really long scene, though.
It is.
Of them, like, trying on so many different clothes and, like, twirling in front of mirrors and putting on
makeup.
How
does this look? Does this look good? Yeah, it's whatever. And then we get introduced to our villain, I guess, you know?
I don't know.
He's so lame. He's
a perv. He's watching them on closed circuit television.
And then he's like, are you going to pay for that?
Yes.
But he tries to do his cool, like, nerd creep voice, and I just wasn't buying it at all. And he sends his gang out. They kill the lights. He sends his gang out to go kill the only two remaining babes on the planet, which is a great idea, as two single guys would do.
I think there's, like, seven of them.
I don't think so. I think there's later on there's like
four.
Two others that are looking cool. Because
there's like the blonde guy that gets taken hostage.
Oh, yes, blonde guy. I forgot about that guy.
Yeah. So
he just gets beat up.
It's like an insane shootout that's really excessive.
You know why?
Situation.
It's because they're wearing shades in a dark room.
Yes, they're fully sunglasses.
It's like they were trying to give themselves the edge by killing the lights, but then they put on shades right before they went out to hunt them
down.
Maybe
they were night vision shades.
Oh, such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
they're
meet...
horrible shots, and they're just kind of shooting a bunch of mannequins.
Yeah, and we meet Willie. He's the gang leader, and then all of a sudden...
He thinks he's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, he's really hamming it up.
This is his time to
this
shine.
This is his moment.
And he's going to take it. Somebody said, there is no such thing as overacting. You... just go for it, and then you drink 17 cups of coffee and go for it
just
again.
Keep going.
Go
just some push more. Harder. Keep going, buddy.
Deeper into Willie.
And then we cut to the scientist. Deeper into Willie. And then... at least Willie didn't go deeper, but I think that it gets to some scientists out front. They land.
They land in their helicopter.
Yes.
Because they're hunting for the girls because they heard them on the... radio.
And they're like, where would teenage girls go? Let's use some deductive reasoning. And what do they decide?
They say, obviously, teenagers are drawn like magnets to the mall, and they must be there on a shopping spree.
Yep. And you know what? They're right.
Yeah.
And they arrive just in time to find the girls.
In a very, very rough game of Russian roulette with Willie.
Oh, really overacting at this point.
It's so bad. And I'm real glad that the scene's not too long. It feels too long.
It does feel a little too long. Anyway, they kill them. The scientists kill them, take care of the street gang or whatever.
Rescue the sisters.
Definitely not sad about.
Nobody cares.
And then the scientists split them. They send
Regina
one way, and they keep Samantha, and then White the female scientist
decides. Well, they kept Samantha because she has acne. Remember, they were talking about it a little while ago. So it's apparently a sign that, I don't know, the comet gave them acne?
Yeah, it's comet acne. Yeah, sure.
Comet acne is bad.
Bad news.
Bad news, Samantha. You get to die because you have comet acne.
Sucks to be you. Your sister doesn't.
So Dr. White, who's kind of like the only babe doctor. Well, actually, all the female doctors are rather attractive.
Oh, yeah, definitely the other female doctors are weird babes, yeah.
And then all the guys are like...
well, they're scientists.
Like rubbing their bellies and wearing their white belts, whatever.
Yeah, so she injects Samantha with some kind of thing, and we're led to believe that she's dead. And
she's dead.
That's the end of that
Adios,
scene.
Adios, Samantha.
And then we cut to...
This is not hard to figure out where this is going.
We cut to Santa Claus in a like convertible cruising down the street. Do you remember this whole scene?
No.
And I was like, what the hell? Why is Santa here? Oh, guess what? It's just Hector.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy guy Hector. Well, that goofy Hector.
Yeah, so he's been at his mom's house being chased by... little boy zombie.
Oh, yeah, that kid. And
this is actually where we learn Hector likes to play dress up.
Oh, we will later find out he's the master of disguise.
So, even though it's kind of like, what does Hector look like? He's got brown hair.
Yeah, I don't know. But he, he's in a Santa costume.
Now he's Santa.
He goes to the radio station and finds White there, who goes on and on. This is a rambling scene.
Well, White is sitting on a couch at the radio station, and you're like, is she drunk?
Is she dying? I can't
tell.
Yeah,
there's been some, like, allusion to the fact that all the scientists are falling apart.
Yeah, and she does this rambling scene. I have a note here because it bothered me. She's telling Hector, we have 36 hours left.
Mm-hmm.
Flashback just a few scenes ago, and she's telling the other scientists, look, it's coming a lot sooner than we thought. It's not going to be whatever, weeks or something. It's going to be days, maybe hours. And he says, how much? And she said, I don't know. So in the world, in like basically 30 minutes, does she deduct that it is now 36 hours exactly?
Perhaps she was lying to somebody.
Well, maybe.
Maybe she was lying to herself.
Well, you know what she decides to do?
Put on some shades.
And put on some smooth jazz and go out in style.
So she pieces out.
Definitely did like a saxophone solo.
Shuffles off this mortal coil and dives.
Oh, that is the way to go in like a cool 80s neon light club to smooth jazz. Oh, so you know what? Kudos.
But before she dies, she basically gives away the entire plot in a ridiculous monologue to Santa Hector.
Yep. And then we cut to the bunker again.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? They're harvesting human blood for serum.
Because they're losing their memory.
Right.
They're starting to fall apart. Because this is where we learn somebody left the vents open as the comet came over. Because, as you know, comets off gas.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Real quick.
Drop some science.
Uh-huh.
And then Regina is now prisoner. She does this amazing escape scene. Where,
well, they tell her that Samantha's dead first.
Yeah, but how she breaks out is she grabs a keyboard from a like 1984 computer, like a Apple II, and smashes it over the guy's head, which clearly knocks him out.
Mm-hmm.
So he's down for the count.
Well, those things probably weighed like, what? I don't
3
know.
3 ounces. Yeah.
50 pounds.
And
he's
out.
Those keyboards were made of marble.
She runs away.
From stone.
Guess who comes cruising up in a cowboy outfit?
Uh-huh.
Old Cowboy Curtis. Hector, the master disguise again. He tricked us yet again. He tricked the security guards, too.
I also, side note here, why did he need to wear a disguise? They had never seen him. They did not know who he was. But he comes in like a strange, like he's a Texan, maybe?
And he's got the accent and everything. I mean, man, this guy's cool.
So he comes up. He was just like, this is a great opportunity. Maybe he was like a struggling actor because I kind of feel like this took place in L.A.
Maybe he was like, if I play my cards right and I ad-lib this scene, they'll do a spinoff that's The Adventures of Hector in the post-apocalyptic world, which I would watch.
First
I would definitely watch.
Yep.
Okay, Sam's not dead. Surprise, she's in the trunk.
Oh, and also at this point, Hector says, this car goes through gas like turkey crap through a horn.
Glad you wrote that down.
I don't know what that means, but I loved it.
Oh, we're back in the bunker. They're going to do the great escape. Man, the scene here, there's like purples and pinks and blues and greens
and
lighting.
They announced that a hostile adolescent has escaped.
All right, it's gearing up.
Aren't all adolescents kind of hostile?
So Regina gets recaptured by the guy she knocked out with the 3 ounce keyboard. So keep in mind, here's a little observation. He got like cut out cold by a keyboard. He backhands her, a grown man backhands her to the face, and she just takes it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I thought. Do you remember earlier in the movie when White is injecting Sam and she's talking about geniuses and Sam says, we had a few geniuses at our school. They were wimps. This is what I thought, because that guy got knocked out by a keyboard.
He's a wimp.
And Regina could take a backhand. So,
dude, why don't we use wimp anymore?
I don't know. It's probably
like
not PC.
I like that word. I hope. Let's research it, because I would like to use the word wimp again.
Yeah. All right. Well, you make that something that you're going to look into.
Okay.
And do your research.
I will. Google.
Okay. Google wimp.
Google wimp.
No, don't Google wimp.
Mm-hmm.
And
safe
then.
Search.
Okay, let's move forward, because we're
actually,
nearing
an end. This is about where my notes end.
Oh, I'm no surprise.
Regina captured, infiltrated by Hector and sister. The power shut off. And then I wrote, fell asleep for the climax.
Well, Hector MacGyver's a car bomb. Do you remember that?
No, I'm straight up sleeping at this point.
Okay, well, Hector creates a car bomb. Mm-hmm. A bunch of zombies are in the car and blow up. So then I have Mariah's sleeping is mm-hmm. my notes.
Yep.
Then you wake up, I'm sure, to the family portrait scene.
No, I don't remember that.
Okay, so flash to the next scene. This is the next day. It's daylight.
So they beat the scientists.
They won. And they're all dressed up. Hector and Regina are dressed like middle-aged parents. And they've got the kids that they rescued from the bunker.
Oh, the boy and the girl in the pajamas. Oh, yeah, yeah. I did wake up.
Regina's dressed like a mom. Yeah. And then it goes across the street, and Samantha is literally dressed in beach gear. Like, she's got a bathing suit with a wrap around her mm-hmm. and shades, and she's like, whatever. And they're talking about not, like, looking both ways before you cross the street. Samantha's, you know, complaining about there's nobody here, walks out into the street, and a car comes ripping down. It's a convertible. It's an 80s babe dude who's like, hey. And she hops in and cruises off. And I just thought to myself, what is the luck? Because you know what her prospects were? Because they had to repopulate the world? The creepy bunker kid that they rescued.
Oh, like
that was her only possible...
No, because he was going to hook up with creepy bunker girl.
Maybe. However, she dodged a bullet when this dude in the convertible came mm-hmm. up, had the shades, cruises off into the sunset. Mm-hmm. That's a wrap. That's Night of the Comet. And right. It was... amazing.
And this is where in my notes I wrote, woke up during closing credits.
Which is cool. All right, everyone. Well, there you go. That's Night of the Comet.
And if you fall asleep while you watch it, don't worry. Just listen to this.
Yeah.
You'll probably figure it
out. That's what it's for. Well, we may have gone on a little long. I don't think so. But this was also our first episode, so we're allowed because we had to do a little background stuff.
There's no rule. We break all the rules.
We are the rules.
Can you guys give us stars?
A lot of stars.
17. 42.
Okay. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. We're on there.
Oh, yep. That's what people say.
That's what I think that you were trying to get to.
Nope.
Okay, so...
Just talking about stars in the sky.
Go do that, but only say nice things and only give high stars. Don't give low stars.
Please.
And then if you want to follow us on Instagram, we're at LaserGraves. I'm on Instagram at EK Wimmer. I don't post anything interesting.
You post weird things. It's fabulous.
Okay. Well, you're my wife, so you're a little biased. And you are on Instagram at?
At Mariah Rose Wimmer. Now, here's the thing. As I tell you my name is Mariah, but it is spelled like Maria because my parents tell me it is the Norwegian spelling of Mariah. Who knows if they're telling the truth, but M-A-R-I-A... RoseWimmer.com. Not.com.
Well, I mean .com if you want to do their website.
Okay.
Oh, we didn't even say because you're an artist, but we'll get to that, I guess, at a later episode.
Yep.
So, yeah, follow us on Laser Graves. And then next week, we'll give you a little heads up. Next episode is going to be, oh man, am I excited to talk about this one. Christopher Pike's kind of debut teen scream novel, Slumber Party.
This was a secret read for me, something that my mom didn't know I had discovered at the library in Harlowton, Montana.
And this is a secret read for me as a grown middle-aged man on the train commuting every day. So we'll get in that next week.
You must be so creepy to the other train riders.
It's called cool.
Okay.
Okay. Well, see you later, everyone. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. I hope you have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.